are tuned in to Mid-Morning Empowerment here on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
All right, let's get into our mental health chat. Juan Royf will be joining us from the Vista Clinic, and we're talking about PTSD once again. And today we're focusing on the role of peer support groups. Now, sometimes the best medicine is knowing you're not alone, and support groups can be a lifeline for those with PTSD, offering understanding and encouragement. But do they really work? Today, we want to look at the impact of peer support in PTSD recovery. Juan, good morning and welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much. Good morning to you.
Thank you for joining us once again. We touched on this briefly when you're talking about the different treatment options for PTSD. You talked about some of the pros and cons of peer support groups. Let's talk a little bit more about those. How do PTSD support groups help those struggling with trauma?
It's an interesting thing, because a lot of people, well, let me say every different person sort of takes away but what they need from it. But in general, there's mutual support where people learn or start realizing that they're not alone. They're not the only one going through this, which is actually kind of a general issue, if I call it that. So it reduces those feelings of isolation. Mm-hmm. There's the shared experiences, which sometimes has a pro and a con. As I say, I share it, so I see new perspectives and ideas for healing.
Yeah.
But there are the odd occasions where my story affects you negatively.
Yeah.
But it's not too common. It creates a safe environment where I can sort of let it all out as a matter of speaking.
Mm-hmm.
It's confidential, so that helps a lot. And yeah, basically just expressing myself. And then I think what it also does for a lot of people is the creation of hope and encouragement, mm-hmm. where to see, hey, you know, that was worse off than me, and he's or she is still going. Hearing other people's victories, whether they're big or small, hearing that there are setbacks, so both sides of the coin, really. And then for a lot of people, it's just practical advice. Hey, you know what I tried when I did this, or when I was going through that? This really helped me. Oh, I haven't heard of that. Let me give it a try. So there are all these factors that really can help.
And then what would then be the difference between professional therapy and peer support?
Well, right off the bat, essentially with professional therapy, you're dealing with a trained professional, or you can say a medical health or mental health expert, rather, which is like your psychologist, your therapist, your counselor.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, they put diagnoses, you get a lot of info as to what we do at Vista. It's really giving you the information of why it's happening, what is happening, what can be done about it from a medical perspective,
mm-hmm.
and using evidence-based techniques to guide the person and help them to heal, help them to process their anxiety, help them to, excuse me, process their trauma. And it's often in a very sort of structured, private, and focused. A lot of therapists will use a treatment plan. So it's not sort of just talking off the bat. Whereas peer support usually informal to some extent. Some structure, but it can be led by an average person who's just gone through it and has good success and sort of shares and gives a platform for it.
Okay.
Not necessarily a medical professional, although you do get group sessions, which then we back to professional therapy.
Okay.
But your general, we call them support group, as we know them, is generally just a person sitting, allowing for a structured way to discuss and to hear and maybe guide the structure or the flow of the group. And it's more about sharing personal experiences and giving mm-hmm. encouragement and having a sense of community, a sense of belonging. I actually want to quickly say this. That sense of community, sense of belonging, no matter which psychiatric illness you're talking about, that mm-hmm. often goes a long way in the healing process. We talk about summarizing and normalizing. And so that really brings about that sense of, you know what, I'm not crazy. I'm not a weirdo.
Yeah.
Look, there's other people that. So yeah, those are the main sort of differences there.
Okay. Okay. So what you said is that while the professional therapy is different, like the main difference that you brought about was that there is a therapist, whereas in a peer group, it might just be other people who maybe have gone through the same thing, not without necessarily having a professional therapist there. But sometimes there is a professional therapist.
You do get, yeah, you get, it's usually a group session where it is, if there's, to give you an idea, a formal group session led by a therapist. There are rules to it. There's medical technical rules to it. Whereas, for example, if I was the therapist leading the group, there cannot be more than 12 people in the group. At the moment, there's more than 12 people and additional therapists there.
Okay.
And the medical professional will perhaps provide insights, provide psychological insights as to why things are happening or what things are happening, and maybe give more of a guidance. In some instances, it's a good, perhaps even a better idea, where what my viewpoint is often that if you do have a person who, for example, gets or has a panic attack while they're speaking or while someone else is speaking, your medical professional is going to know what to do with that person.
Yeah.
Whereas in your informal, I'm going to just call it that, your informal support group, that's not always the case. Not to run it down, not to say it's bad.
Sure.
But yeah, those usually have that information, and it's a talking, sharing session,
yeah,
rather than a construct.
Okay. All right. Now, are online support groups as effective as in-person ones?
I'm not hesitant. I'm thinking. You know, for a lot of people, absolutely. And in some ways, again, dependent on the person, we are talking about PTSD. So, you know, if you have a person with severe PTSD, that might actually be better, because going out of the house and having to sort of battle through traffic and all that kind of stuff, that's possible, that person's issue. However, in general, one of the things that people tend to do with a lot of your psychiatric illnesses is they tend to isolate. Mm. Now, doing it online then just helps along that isolation. And because you think about it, there's a massive difference between sitting among people, and I'm going to get a little graphic, hearing them, smelling them, being able to touch them, if need, you know, that shoulder on the hand saying, you know, let it out, cry, it's fine. That's hugely different from sitting and staring at a screen and pictures of, let's say, six other people.
Yeah.
Yes, you're still getting conversation. Yes, you're still getting the sense of, I hear your story, I hear what you've been through. You can still learn from each other. You can still get each other's information. I just think that there's a lot to be said for the in-person.
Yes.
Are they as, I guess, from a purely therapeutic standpoint, from a purely assistance standpoint, yeah, I think they can be as good. But from a communal sort of social structure standpoint, I don't think they are as good as being the person.
Right.
You know, and there's a little thing. Your face-to-face connection is sometimes a little bit better. And also being in a structured or even semi-structured session is fewer distractions. If you think about it, when you're at home, if you do it on your computer and your phone can still ring unless you turned it off, there's a couple of other distractions, you know, depending on the time, you know, the kids running in the background. Whereas, and that's another positive for me for doing it at another place in a sort of semi-structured, structured group, where I'm out of the house, I'm away from everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
It's my time.
Yeah.
My time. Mm. But I'm the long and short of it is neither one is really terrible, okay. And there are pros and cons for both.
Okay.
And I think they can both have effects of healing. Let's put it down to that.
Mm, mm. Now, how can someone find a trustworthy and supportive PTSD group? Where, do you Google it? Do you have to wait for a recommendation? How do you find a group that you can trust?
Well, the first thing you can do is simply to, if you are seeing a psychologist or psychiatrist or counselor, then you simply ask them. A lot of the guys are connected into or at least have the information about it. It is beneficial to get, can I call it a word of mouth referral?
Yeah.
Because then you can ask a couple of questions,
yeah,
as to, you know, what is it like? What people, where is it? That kind of thing. But you can Google it, and a couple of things to consider is, you know, again, start with a trusted source. So if it's a friend or a family member, or again your therapist, maybe that's a trusted source in a recommendation,
yeah,
or a referral. Because that's usually a good idea. You don't wanna walk into something that's not great or even negative. And even if you do get it from a trusted source, one of the things to do is, one, trust your instincts, ask questions if you can before going. If there's a group or a session leader, ask as many questions as you can. The structure, the times, all of that, the ambiance plays a role. And then you've got to sort of also have your own little checklist as to what draws me. Do I like we just mentioned, online versus in person? Mm-hmm. You know, which one draws me? Which one is really better for me? And why? I always like to say to people, you need to ask why. Because if you say, no, you know what, I'm more drawn to the online, then are you doing that because of comfort and the feeling of safety, or are you isolating more? So, yeah, that's your own sort of thing, is to see which one do I want to go to?
Yeah.
What is it that I want out of it? And then, you know, another step further, am I going to a sort of social support group, or am I going to one where there's a mental health professional?
Right.
Is it the right thing, or are these guys, they've labeled it, let's call PTSD support group, but they're actually talking about gardening, because unfortunately that happens. Make sure. And then I would go for one or two sessions and then literally evaluate it for myself and see, you know, is it for me, is it not for me?
Yeah.
Structure, as I said, ask the questions. And then I quickly touched on it, but trust your instincts. If something feels wrong, nothing keeps you there, nothing holds you there. If they do, a red flag for me is, you know, some ask for donations, but if it's a subscription, then maybe we're looking at a money. So have a look at that as well. Well, us, unfortunately, they aren't as frequent as you may want them to be, especially in your sort of more far apart areas in the cities. Usually it's okay.
Uh-huh.
There's just to mention, if you like, if you don't mind, the South African Federation for Mental Health Helpline. They can sort of, people can just Google this to get their numbers. There's SADAC, the South African Depression and Anxiety Group, that support group. And then there's Lifeline, which has been around for a long time. And all those are available.
Mm.
An interesting one, it's not based, and I'm not punting it, it came to mind. The AA has can I call it a family and friends section? Maybe they're going to be fight with me. But they've got, which is also a support group, it's not particular to PTSD.
Uh-huh.
And usually they ask that there's an alcoholic's connection, whether it was a family member or a husband or a wife or something. But I've had many people come back with very favorable feedback. So if you can't find anything else in your town or your area, maybe knock on their door and see if there's anything available in your area.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm a little bit of a mouthful.
All right. So what are some challenges that people might face when joining a support group, and how should they deal with those challenges? You know, sometimes the first time you face any kind of resistance or any kind of negative emotion attached to the experience, that you're just like, no, I'm out of here. Is that the right way to go? What are the challenges we can expect, and what do we do about them?
Yeah. You know, one of the things I mentioned just now, you need to, if need be, just push just a little to at least do two groups, because your first, what a lot of people experience, your first group, whether it's formal or informal, there's you're meeting new people, you are new, you're not really, you've read and heard and asked questions, but you're not still 100% sure.
Yeah.
You're a bit nervous, you're feeling a little bit vulnerable, you're perhaps even feeling a little apprehensive. And so your first session is perhaps not going to be the most, or the best experience.
Okay.
You might walk away from, oh my goodness, what was that? So it is often a good idea to just go for that second one and say, have I got the same experience as I did the first time? Is there a red flag for me somewhere? As I said, one of the big challenges is feeling nervous, feeling vulnerable, feeling apprehensive.
Mm-hmm.
And then, again, meeting new people, whether you go into a social gathering somewhere with new people or you go into a support group, it's new people. Trust takes time. So that's another factor. And, of course, that's even a, can we call it, bigger factor for people with PTSD, where trust has become a really big issue. So that might take time.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of people, they try and stay away, actually, because, again, for the simple reason that people share their stories and they share their experiences. And so a lot of people are scared of being triggered, scared of having to relive their own experience.
Yeah.
For those people, I usually recommend going to a structured group where there's a trained professional.
Mm.
If you are that prone, then that's possibly a better idea. For a lot of people, finding the right fit, you know, it could be as simple or basic as there's just one guy that rubs you the wrong way, and that happens.
Mm.
Anyone that's ever gone for training sessions for anything, there's always, you know, there's a few categories, but there's always someone, you know.
Yeah.
You get your class clown, your reserved one, you get your loud one. And if there's really someone that bugs you, then perhaps find something new, or mention it to the group leader, the group facilitator, and see if they can do something about it. But again, give it perhaps even three sessions before you make up your mind. And then, unfortunately, the world we live in, time and commitment. Sometimes it's just not getting there. There's just not enough time. And often we're embarrassed to say, you know what, I'm sorry, I can't do overtime today. I've got to go to my support group because of the stigma that we know that's attached to psychiatric illness. But I often say to clients, you know, if it's something you're serious about, if you really do want to do everything you can to heal, then that particular issue is something you're going to have to sort out with yourself and say, am I going to make this work, or am I going to use time as an excuse?
Mm.
Because it's a really easy excuse.
Yeah.
If you ever go to the gym, then it's very quick to say, today there's just not enough.
Yeah.
So we very can much very much can do the same thing with regards to support groups, where we find excuses not to go. But if you really are committed, it shouldn't be that much of a problem. But it can be a challenge. You know, you got your single moms, and you got people who are just committed at work, trying to just make ends meet. If that's the case, then maybe online is for you, because it takes away some of that pressure.
Okay.
So, you know, and then there's little logistics, getting there.
Yeah.
Time and the, or not time rather, but the money. You know, petrol money. Bus, sometimes that's a real issue, and sometimes that's where your general social support comes in. I had a client who mentioned it to his neighbor, and the neighbor said, you know what? End of story, I'm taking you. And I think they went every Wednesday.
Oh, wow.
And they made a plan. They did it. I had another client who came one time, and another member of the group overheard this person saying, you know, I really want to come, but it's really, really difficult for me. And they were like, where do you stay? I said, where they stay. They said, right, as of now, I pick you up every time you come.
Wow.
So, you get some beautiful stories, but there are logistical things like that. So,
yeah.
So those are some of the interesting from those who have had first-hand experience, what they also think. But again, just sort of close off with this from my side is, if it's a priority, if it's something that you really, they are or can be very, very beneficial.
Yes.
And they can be an addition to your regular session with your psychologist or your psychiatrist. So it's not just that 45 or 50 minutes. And again, social support, always a good idea.
Got it. Well, thank you so much, Juan, for yet another very insightful and eye-opening lesson there. Look forward to chatting with you again on Friday. Thank you so much.
You have a good one.
Thank you.
You are tuned in to Mid-Morning Empowerment here on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.